Hello, hello. Welcome to What to Read Wednesdays, your go-to podcast for staff picks from your friends at Delaware County District Library. Here, we'll talk about books, podcasts, and other relevant media. I'm your host, Annie Pasma. Good morning, folks. We are back here on this Wednesday morning, although, in all transparency, I am recording this on a Monday morning. So it's nice and rainy while I record this today. I like rainy mornings, but I digress. Sorry. As we get closer to Summer Reading Club, I want to highlight the service Personalized Picks. We all know that reading just 20 minutes a day will help not just kids, but adults too in, you know, exercising your brain, as it were. Sometimes it's hard to know what to read next. I know that I struggle with that, and that's kind of the purpose of this podcast. But if you go to our website, you can find a link in our services section for personalized picks. And all you have to do is fill out the Google form there, and we'll do our best to find your next read. Speaking of next reads, let's talk about some reviews that may convince you to pick up a good book recommended by my lovely coworkers. So we'll start out with our frequent guest, Mark.
Hello, my name is Mark Stevens, and I work circulation at the Powell Branch. Today's book I'd like to recommend is A Case of Conscience, and the author is James Blish. And I would recommend this book for adult readers. Today's book will interest sci-fi readers who enjoy the contrast and battle between religion and science. A Case of Conscience is a sci-fi classic that started as a novella in 1953, was expanded to be a novel in 1958, and then won the Hugo Award for Best Novel in 1959. The author is considered to be one of the great intellectual sci-fi writers who incidentally went on to write the 12 volumes in the Star Trek series from 1967 to 1977. There are two parts to this book. Part one is set mostly on the planet Lithia, and part two is set back on Earth when Earthlings deal with the fallout of Lithia's discovery. Lithia is a planet 50 light years from Earth. It appears to be an almost perfect world. It has lush vegetation and an environment very much in sync with the Lithians, so the planet seems easily self-sustaining. The Lithians resemble humans in that they walk upright on two legs, but they appear reptilian. They are very intelligent with their own language. They are not quite as technologically advanced as we are due to there being very little iron on their planet. The Lithians' nature caused them to live in a conflict-free society. They seem to have no sense of self-awareness or self-importance. Instead, they function for the greater good of everyone and never show competition, jealousy, or aggression. Crime is a concept they can't fathom. It seems no evil exists, only good. In 2049, four Earthlings are sent to evaluate the planet to see if Earthlings can live among the Lithians, or if they can use the planet only as a way station, or if they should have the planet be quarantined. The four characters represent human attributes. The main character is Father Chan Says, a biologist and Jesuit priest. He represents theology, fear, and doubt. Cleaver represents greed and pride. Michelis shows trust in human goodness and destiny, and Agronsky represents just the average man willing to accept life as it comes. The fate of Lithia lies in the hands of these four men. It is as Father Sanchez wrestles with his decision about Lithia that the book shines. He observes that the Lithians, who have no religion or sense of God, are actually better people than Earthlings. He feels despair as he wonders if God is really necessary for a moral society. Do the Lithians have free will and moral awareness, or are they basically just soulless animals? Is their whole society an illusion created by the devil to trick earthlings into rejecting God? Or are they simply in a Garden of Eden, similar to the first humans? These are just some of the questions Father Sanchez agonizes over. Part 2 takes our four characters back to an Earth in turmoil. Due to fears of nuclear war, almost all of humanity lives in shelter societies underground. Civil unrest simmers. Society is even more destabilized as news that the four astronauts have brought back an embryonic Lithian given to them as a parting gift by the Lithians. As he rapidly grows and becomes a force in the media, the Lithian causes Earthlings' cohesion to further fracture. I don't want to give any spoilers, but I can mention that Father Sanchez ends up meeting with the Pope and he must deal with charges of heresy. Will Lithia and Earth face a final judgment day? As you can gather, this is a heavy read. I felt it was kind of slow-paced, but most critics disagreed. This book does an excellent job of dealing with the ethical quandary science and religion sometimes places us. While this book is science fiction, it also is heavy on theology. If this sounds like something you might like, give it a try, especially since it is a well-respected classic. If you by any chance read and liked Maria Doria Russell's The Sparrow, and the book group I'm in certainly did, then you should definitely read this book. It's only 242 pages, and it is available on Libby.
I have to say, I've never heard of this book. And I'm sorry that I haven't, but I'm glad that now I am now aware. I don't know about you, but I love hearing about classics. Classics are the best. All right, next we're going to hear from CJ at the Main Branch. CJ recommends The Salt Path by Raynor Nguyen. CJ recently read The Salt Path a second time because the title was included on a recommended list of books about the issue of homelessness. The Salt Path is a memoir of a very difficult time in the life of Raynor Nguyen, and her husband Moth. Because of legal entanglements and a failed business venture, they lose everything: their house, their farmland, their farm stay business, and their savings. At the same time, Moth is diagnosed with a debilitating degenerative disease with few treatment options. They are homeless and despairing with a few options left, so they decide to walk. They pack their rucksacks with the bare essentials and set out to walk and wild camp on the rugged 630-mile southwest coast path through Devon and Cornwall. Ray describes the challenges they face with no sugarcoating. The terrain is rough, water sources and free camp places to camp are hard to find, and they have minimal financial resources for food. They are often hungry and thirsty, filthy and exhausted, and scrambling to set up or take down their tent in the dark. Ray writes unabashedly about their positive and negative interactions with people on the path and in the towns along the way. Ray and Moth modify their backstory when they experience people backing away upon hearing that they are homeless. Within the framework of this gripping story of despair and challenge, Ray writes beautifully about the natural world that they live within. Her descriptions of the weather, sea and beaches, bird, animal, and plant life, and the geological features below their feet paint a vivid picture of the landscape of their days of walking. As they struggle with and glory in the natural world, their relationship with that world and each other is changed by their journey. At the end of the book, CJ wondered what happened next for Ray and Moth. Fortunately, Ray has written another book, The Wild Silence, that relates the next chapter of their story. And CJ is really looking forward to rejoining them soon. I don't know about you, but I am intrigued. Although it is a difficult book to read, a recommendation I would have is The Glass Castle. I read it in college, and it affected me deeply. It is also a true story about homelessness, and I believed it was turned into a movie a number of years ago. So go read it if you haven't. Next, we're going to hear from Jenny, formerly of the main branch, but now at the outreach branch. Jenny recommends Sweet Ruin, Immortals After Dark No. 15 by Cressley Cole. Say hello to Josephine, aka Joe, an immortal of unknown power and origin. She has existed alone since childhood when she abandoned her brother to protect him from herself. Nearly 10 years later, she crosses paths with a charismatic archer, Rune the Baneblood, a demon-slash-fey hybrid with poisonous blood, doomed to never have another. Together, the unlikely pair works together to try and take down one of the oldest living immortal creatures. Will these two outcasts be able to trust and resist each other long enough to complete their mission? Will Joe ever truly know who and what she is? If you love world-building and strong-willed, witty characters, then this is the series for you. Filled with various creatures and lots of adventure, Cressley Cole writes a story for everyone. Next, she recommends Never Alone by Elizabeth Haynes. Jenny is a huge fan of Elizabeth Haynes, especially her first novel, Into the Darkest Corner, and her third novel, Human Remains. However, Never Alone just didn't compare to her early novels. Sarah is a middle-aged woman living by herself since her husband's passing and her children leaving for college. However, when a friend from the past comes knocking, she can't help but give him a place to stay. Soon after, strange things start happening, and Sarah doesn't quite feel alone anymore. But what or who was the cause of this unease? It took Jenny almost 9 months to complete this slow-moving thriller. It was only upon getting halfway through that she couldn't put it down. So, if you're a fan of a slow burn read, multiple perspectives, and suspense, then this is the book for you. Thank you so much, Jenny. All right, so on to my recommendations. What I am reading. Well, right now I'm reading two books. One is a biography of C.S. Lewis by Jeff and Janet Benge. It's from a series I used to read as a kid, and they're really good. The other is The Rescuers by Marjorie Sharp. It's the book that kids' movies, The Rescuers, so Rescuers and Rescuers Down Under, is based off of. The illustrations are what caught my eye. They are adorable. They're by one of my all-time favorite illustrators, Garth Williams. So think Charlotte's Web and the Little House on the Prairie series. So, so good. I love his illustrations. What I'm listening to is A Most Magical Girl by Karen Foxley. I have about 30 minutes left of this book, and I absolutely adore this audiobook. I can't remember who it's narrated by, but the narrator is perfect for this particular book and is probably going to become one of my favorite narrators. Annabelle Gray is a very proper young lady whose world is completely upturned when she learns she's from a long line of witches, and that she is, in fact, a most magical girl. I highly, highly recommend this one for historical fantasy fans. It's a kids book. So probably recommended for ages 8 to 12, but I love it. Like, adults, I think you'll like it too. What I'm looking forward to is watching the Shadow and Bone series on Netflix. Obviously, I have read the series and I loved them, so I hope you read them too before watching the series. If you haven't, shame on you. Alrighty, folks, that is it for today. Email questions, comments, concerns to whattoread@delawarelibrary.org. I'm your host, Annie Pasma. Thanks for listening.